Oh, folks, guess what you tuned into? Comedy Film Nerds episode 481.
Yep, first episode back after our big announcement.
I know, that was, first of all, if you haven't heard, we announced that December 12th is our 600th and final episode. We're doing it live at Dynasty Typewriter. We're wrapping this business up after 10 years. And I want to just say we received so many cool emails and social
tweets
media posts.
And posts, yeah. It was very... It was very touching. Thank you so much. And, you know, all the posts and emails and tweets about how much the show has meant to you over the years, we really appreciate that.
Yeah, and it's one of the reasons why we decided we wanted to, we just didn't want to say, oh, by the way, we're done. We wanted to, like, give everybody a couple of months.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. To kind of have a fun...
And end on a high note, all of those things.
Yeah, and have a fun farewell tour. You know what I mean? Have a, you know, like when a pro ball player goes around all the arenas and they put him in a rocking chair because they know he's retiring.
Yep, there's a lot of good movies that we'll be talking about between now and December 12th.
And as we said, so now the ticket link is up. The show is December 12th at Dynasty Typewriter. It is on my website, grahamelwood.com, and you can go to Dynasty Typewriter's website, and it's come to the show. We're going to try to have, you know, as many. We won't have all, obviously, but we'll have as many of the guests who've been on the show pop in for a couple of minutes and just say hey. And I hope that our guest on today's program can do that. Ladies and gentlemen.
I already told him about it.
Good. Let's please welcome.
I told him he wasn't invited. Well, yes. I told him he could come to see the
find
show.
Find something else to do December 12th. No, let's welcome our friend of the show who's been here numerous times, Rick Overton, everybody.
Hey, yeah, thanks. I look forward to seeing you that night.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'll do five. Don't worry. Yeah. Since we're going to have 75 people up there. Yes. Be sure to put me on last because that's an honored spot.
Yes.
What do you mean the honor of the last spot after 75 people?
Yeah. It's because you're the best. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You want to go on at 1 in the morning?
That's a compliment in other countries.
You could close
like a belch at a meal.
Yeah. You could close it for a free drink.
Yeah. I don't drink and I'll need it at the end of the
day. 10% off some of the food items.
Yes. You know? 10%. Yeah. Well, all those years have paid off.
Yes, you've earned it.
And remember, every comedy club, you could choose one of three food items.
Yeah. All out of the same fryer basket.
Yes.
Oh, God. You can't get the combo platter.
Okay. No.
But one
no.
of three individually.
Yes.
Yeah. The heart attack special.
Right.
Please.
The deep fried cheese something.
Yeah. Go to the light. The go to the light cheese platter.
Go to the light.
And don't worry. They'll all taste similar. They'll have the same breading on them.
Taste like the fryer. They'll taste like last week's act.
So, 481, everybody. I can't say it's halfway to... to nine, whatever.
You got to just say it's closer to 600.
It's closer to 600. It's closer to 600.
We got a lot of movies to talk
we do.
About.
Yeah, let's do two of them right now. Knock two out of the way.
At the same time?
Just bang them out, boys. Bang them out.
Well, you know, Rick seems gung-ho right out of the gate. Maybe we should have him go first.
Let's do it. I don't know much about this movie, The Wandering Earth.
Now, The Wandering Earth, you saw, and I will say this at first. I'm like, what an odd title. I mean, that is it something, somebody who wanders on the earth, or was there a translation
issue?
Oh,
I thought you meant Rick's name.
Yeah, yeah.
What an odd name. Overton.
Overton. And, you over a ton.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't add up.
And So then when I read the description, it's literally about them trying to move the earth so it doesn't get destroyed.
Under your feet, I feel...
So I had to read some trivia on this movie, and it's a Chinese film, and what I loved about it is that, first of all, Wu Jing, one of the protagonists in the film, very famous Chinese actor, only agreed to show up in one scene. But since he was the only big star of the film, the director, Frant Guo... changed the script and kept putting him in more and more scenes. One day of shooting became weeks, then months. Wing's pay for each movie is around $10 million. After weeks of shooting, the director asked him that since the movie was over budget, maybe he didn't mind not getting paid. Wu Jing loved the director and the film so much, not only that he agree to not get paid, he invested his own $9 million into the film.
Okay.
Many people thought Wu Jing was conned by the director at the time. In fact, without his name, the movie wouldn't have been sold to so many theaters at all. And turns out, since it was a big hit in China, he will get his money back and then some.
He did make a cut deal, though.
Yes.
Tail end cut deal.
I don't know what...
That means you make money at the end, and they don't just make the money and ditch you.
Oh.
If you see money back, you made a cut deal. You made a cut of it at the end.
He must have, yeah. I mean, especially when
you'd see money at the end.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, I want to know the exact words that that director said to an actor to not only not get paid, but to invest $9 million of his own money in the film.
Yeah, what happened?
I want to know those exact words and what
cut
kind
deal.
Of weird...
look at this. Look what you're going to make in the long run.
Yeah.
And then think of your cut. Make a good deal. Some actors have done that and done quite nicely in franchise movies that they've signed on. They probably followed that model.
But I wouldn't be surprised to find a hypnotism stone in his the trailer or something. Yes. Yeah, something.
So they use witchcraft. Yeah. Chris is saying. Rick believes it was just good business acumen. Chris is saying witchcraft.
I'm
okay.
Saying, yeah. Some kind of weird Chinese black magic, I think, happened.
That's
and,
it.
And it worked out. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm on the conspiracy show again. I'm back on the conspiracy.
Well, now hearing that, Rick, what did you think of this film?
Well, you know, you leave your actual physics cap off. Leave that on the shelf over there. That the Earth could withstand rockets pushing it away and not blow its own atmosphere out into space, suction drafting all the air away into space from doing that.
Yeah, you would have to leave that hat off for sure. For
a lot of
like
reasons
this.
Why that the Earth would shake and move in ways from the pulling away of the moon. It would be catastrophic in so many ways. There wouldn't be a lot of people. So if we can get past that part and show this is a struggle for everybody to somehow push the Earth further away from the sun before the sun does some flare thing and kill everybody or something like that. And they got to keep going and showing... They even go past Saturn at one point, or the right past Saturn. And there is gravitational stuff. They're not really dealing with the physics, but they are showing your standard, you know, there's a father figure, there's the kids who fall in love, there's the goofy guy who's a slacker and always has the funny glib thing to say in a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
The team, the funny team, they really followed all the models. It's not original in its dynamic. It's not really original in... the script dialogue, even with the translations, it's kind of original with the idea of pushing the Earth out of the way. That's sort of, you know, space 1999 plus.
Right.
And in that way, it's quite unique. And so you made the Earth your spaceship, and you're not sure how to steer it. And it has an ecological message in that. But, you know, I think it was a pretty smart move for their market, and we have to start thinking in terms of an international market for films.
Did it feel like a disaster-type film?
Yeah, it felt at times like a disaster film and like one of those Roland Emmerich, you know, it's cold is going to kill you or the Earth crust will shatter or something like that. But somehow lots of people die and the Earth goes through a challenge. And he's following that model very well, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And adding for that market familiar faces that will get them the laughs and the familiarity and the fan base.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he did a very good job of following the model.
Well,
I think it's interesting
and upping it a little.
Well, because you know we've talked about this. The Chinese film market has completely flourished in the last 15 years.
Totally,
and where they don't need a movie to do well over here because they have three times as many screens.
That's right,
and five times as many people.
Well, the
theaters do good over there.
Yep.
It's better than here.
And they were saying, too, a movie like this, it's China's first full-scale interstellar film because they do a lot of fantasy and martial arts and historical.
Wirework films, yeah.
And they said that the studio's investors have hesitated when it comes to the genre because of the perception that they need both a high level of special effects and rake in lots of money in order to be successful. So that was some weird kind of like... fear that they had. But, you know, a lot of fantasy and other genres are also very expensive. And with computer generation, I mean, you're either making a spaceship or a dragon. Is the work really that different?
Right.
Which whatever you're making.
One is available sets, the other isn't. And there's an infinity of available sets.
Right.
For a wushu film.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to build from scratch all of the science fiction stuff.
Right.
Now you have to hope that there's a series of those films to reuse the sets,
mm-hmm.
or those sets just go to crap.
Or the
one giant effort and ancient Rome disintegrates and
or the CGI
Egypt
assets.
Goes to hell.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, because once you have them in the computer, you know they're in the computer,
right?
So I thought that was interesting, and so this movie, in a weird way, even though, like you said, there wasn't a completely original for China. It actually broke ground because they don't normally make movies like this.
They're usually martial arts from 200-300 years ago.
Right.
Stories in times of antiquity. But they have...
Rick Myers would have a lot to say about this, too, yeah. about the Chinese government controlling the films and what is actually being made and all the... Which is... So for a movie like this to be made, it was probably even harder, as we saw, because the star had to put $9 million in it.
Well, they're addressing a new middle class.
Yeah.
And they want to make product for the middle class that matches our product for our middle class.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, again, you talk about... So in the last 15 years, there's been thousands of new screens newly opened. Cineplexes weren't a thing in China. Going to the movies was not a thing. And now because of this new middle class, because of their economy, going to the movies is a sign of upward mobility, where here we're struggling. Now we have all the VOD and streaming and all that stuff. It's harder to get...
A lot more competition for the theaters.
Here, mm-hmm. over there, it's like...
That's why the studios are all the big studios here are like, we have to get the movie in China.
Yeah.
We have to, because it's a huge market and they make a ton of money there.
Star Wars has gotten on the beam and made sure that you put in characters that relate to a marketplace and, you know.
Well, that's per the Chinese film office is like, if you want a screen here, you have to have...
There's rules.
You have to have Chinese characters.
Yeah.
You have to shoot some there. And mm-hmm. and the Chinese characters are always portrayed in a positive light.
Right.
The Chinese government is always portrayed in a positive light.
They're heroic.
Yep.
Right.
Uh-huh. Yep. You can't have anything that's critical of the Chinese government.
Oh, yeah. And Hong Kong's about to be absorbed by a blob.
Yeah. It's,
yeah, they're about to be blobbed. So it might be a free China might not be a thing we see much longer. You know, an absorbed China that looks semi-free for outward purposes is probably what we'll get the variant of.
Well, mm-hmm. you know, the art reflects that. It's coming out of the of the country for sure.
Mm-hmm. So art is always the way to see.
As as Rick Myers was telling me, the filmmakers are getting a little more creative. Like he was saying, like certain films will criticize the Chinese government without criticizing the Chinese
right.
government. Like they walk this line between martial arts. What do you call it? Gun fu is the other thing when you
gun fu. With the two empty guns pointed at your click. Right, the John Woo thing.
Well, it's the thing. It's like it's what Rod Serling did with The Twilight Zone. He had gotten so much flack for writing all those Playhouse 90 things. There's that great interview that you can watch with him and Mike Wallace. And Mike Wallace is bringing up, you know, you've been fighting network censors and all this stuff. Writing back then, Playhouse 90 was those live teleplays. Mm-hmm. And Rod Serling in that interview was like, no. And he goes, you got this new series. Oh, it's just science fiction. It's light and fun. And so that's how Rod Serling got away with it. He did all this light science fiction that had all this heavy social commentary,
right.
anti-war message and all this stuff in there.
But Red Scare Paranoia.
I mean, all that stuff.
Very hip.
But it was just, it was science fiction. So he got away
with
it.
He was the first anti-Vietnam guy, by the way,
mm-hmm.
with a Pip.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
A Pip episode.
Yeah, there's a lot of anti-war because he was a World War II vet.
And he saw it, man.
He saw the horrors of it. And there's a great episode where a young Dean Stockwell, it's towards the end of World War II, and he wants to, we got to go get those Japs. And these like battle-weary guys are like, oh, man, I don't want to fight anymore. I don't want to kill anybody anymore. And then Dean Stockwell, he is now a Japanese soldier. And he's being attacked by the Americans, and it's like he has to deal with that. It was like such an amazing anti-war message.
I don't remember that episode.
Oh, it's a great episode.
It kind of was the inspiration for the movie with Vic.
Yep.
To be the racist, now he's a Jew in Poland and in the train.
Yep, and he was a black man getting lynched in the movie,
right.
all that stuff.
Right. That's one thing that's really nice about streaming. You can kind of go and rediscover a lot of these new old shows.
Like,
I've actually gone back and I've started watching the old Twilight Zones, the Star Treks, and you know, you have them at your fingertips now, which never used to exist.
Yeah.
But you know, this is a bit of a side note, but from what they're seeing with the streaming, this old content, you think, well, it can't be worth that much. Turns out it is, because new generations are discovering it. So it's actually worth more than they thought it was at first. That's why you're seeing a lot of these other companies pulling it back from Netflix, or Netflix making this extra money because they realize there's more value to it than they thought, because Next Generation's discovering
it. It's not throwaway, it's product.
It's not. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And they put it in the wrong bin.
Right, right, yeah.
Now they're going to slowly take it out of the bins and nobody notices.
That's exactly right. Now you're seeing like everything being more put back. And,
they're doing all kinds of weird stuff. They had to change the way they run episodes now because people were getting the free Netflix week and binging everything at once and then dumping it.
You're not going to see a lot of Disney product on Netflix much.
No, longer. You were telling me about that. Yeah. Let's go into that a little bit. The Disney takeover of the whole place is going to put Netflix on its heels a little bit, huh?
Absolutely. We've talked about it in a couple episodes. It's a significant new streaming service that's going to include Hulu and ESPN.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the last couple years have been ramping up to this by pulling off all of the Disney properties, which is Star Wars, which is Marvel, all those Marvel series that were on Netflix,
animated movies, too.
All the animated ones, all the ancillary Marvel and Star Wars stuff that was on all these other platforms and channels and stuff like that, it's all being pulled off. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be interesting to see. Mm. I'm not a big proponent of supporting mammoth multinational conglomerates, but God, this is going to be hard. Yeah.
I was telling Rick, I said, because I don't necessarily want ESPN and or Hulu. They ran a promotion, and I mentioned it on Facebook, and then Rick Myers bought it too. If you bought 3 years in advance for Disney streaming, it was $4 a month for 3 years.
Oh,
so $4 a month. And I have kids. So, you know, that's an incredible value for me because they're going to have the entire library of Disney films too, of animated movies. So, I mean, I would have bought it just for The Mandalorian.
Well, let's, you know, they're watching CBS online very closely.
Yes.
They're seeing how they do as a service, you know.
Well, yeah. And, you know, if you compare CBS to Disney, it's, maybe CBS should only be $1 a month.
So, yeah, I mean,
it's going to challenge their model.
Yes, for
sure. CBS, to a much smaller, lesser degree, is like, look, you get all the Star Wars titles, you get all our scripted stuff, you get CBS Sports.
Yes.
So it's sort of...
You get our library.
You get our library of stuff, you get anything that they own, like Twilight Zone, past whatever.
And this is a...
Star Trek.
This is a minor point, but it is worth noting. Disney is a studio that's made all different types of content. CBS was a channel. And, you know, when you have content from a channel, it has a specific tone,
budget.
Size and budget, and content. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, everything on ABC is going to look different than everything on CBS. Whereas Disney, if you're just a company, production company like Disney, you've got everything from a Star Wars movie to a... like an animated kids Mickey show. So you have all these different things that's what Netflix was trying to do is, we're going to give content, but it's not going to be just Orange is the New Black. We're going to do a bunch of kids shows. We're going to do original movies. We're going to do everything. We're not replacing a channel. We're replacing everything.
Right.
And Disney saw that and like, yeah, but we have better content and we're going to do our own.
You know, sometimes the originator of a thing isn't always the winner of something.
Yeah, that's certainly true.
Absolutely.
So, all right, let's get back into some movies. Graham, you saw a couple movies on the plane.
I saw some plane movies, Chris. Mm-hmm. It's two movies, The Best of Enemies and The Front Runner, that came out. They were trying to sort of be Oscar movies last year.
Sounds like it'd be a good double feature to drive in.
It would. And both of us, I remember when these movies came out. So The Front Runner is about the Gary Hart story.
Yes. Our first reaction is, anybody going to want to see
this? Does anyone care about the Gary Hart story? The trailer, again, shocker, didn't do the film justice.
Surprise.
Because what this movie focuses more on is the media's responsibility.
Oh, well, that's not in the trailer at all.
No, it's not. Mm-mm. Because he's like, why is this? Who cares? Now, granted, Gary Hart did a jackass thing by going, follow me around. You know, Hart was pretty arrogant.
See what happens.
What are you going to do?
And
the political cartoons that came out of that were hilarious.
I remember.
But clothes coming out of a house going, bored yet?
Yeah. I mean, and that wasn't, but there's a line in there, like when they're the Miami Herald, I think is the story that first broke it. And they're interviewing, not interviewing, but one of the guys is played by, what's his name, Molina. He goes, look, man, when LBJ, 3 months after he got sworn into office, he brought all the press corps into the room and said, look, guys, I'm going to be bringing a lot of women into the White House. I hope you show me the same courtesy you showed JFK. LBJ just said it. And it was just like understood. It was like, yeah, okay. He's the president. He's going to be getting a lot of ladies. Let him. And so they were like, you know, Gary Hart was kind of like, why can't I just do that? Or why can't I just, and it shows the blunders of Gary Hart, the arrogance of his campaign, because he was the front runner. But also the media going, wow, this is 1987, 88. This is the beginning of multinational conglomerates buying out media and pushing and news departments having to be profitable.
Right.
And taking sensationalized stories that used to be on the 15th page and putting them on the front page, and everybody having to kind of compete for that. The start of the 24-hour news cycle was begin. You know what I mean? It was cable news was just kind of starting. Mm-hmm. CNN was becoming a thing.
You know, originally the networks, I remember when I was in college learning about this, they had somebody from CBS come and speak, and they said, well, you know, our shows are where we make money. News is our responsibility. But then when they came in, the big corporations, like, well, no, everything needs to make money.
Everything needs to make money. So, yeah, the news divisions used to just report the news, and they didn't have to get good ratings.
Right.
And then that changed.
Yeah.
And so then it means, now we got a guy having an affair is a big thing we got to chase. And so it's really, it's a better movie than I thought it was going to be. Great plane movie, by the way, and good acting.
Great plane movie. That's a good compliment.
You know, yeah. Yeah, it's a better movie. Was it Oscar worthy? I don't know. I'd have to go back and review all the movies it was up against, or that it was trying to compete against that it never got nominations for. But it was a good film. And then the same thing for The Best of Enemies. So The Best of Enemies is based on a true story of there was a big, you know, integration battle in, I believe, Durham, North Carolina, 1971, between Ann Atwater, real person, and this guy, C.P. Ellis, head of the Ku Klux Klan. Mm-hmm.
Sam Rockwell.
Played by Sam Rockwell. And Taja P. Henson plays Ann Atwater. And they do, it's the classic thing. They do a good job of, you know, she's a beautiful woman. They make her look like not that, you know. And I saw the trailer and I was like, all right, it's based on a true story, but it looks like this sort of Hollywood cookie cutter period piece race movie.
White savior.
I was just like, oh man. You know, like, but there's way more to it. And it shows the complexities. It was this 2 week, they did this thing that was done. This guy did these things called, I don't know why, how this name came, but called a Chanette, where it was like, we're going to have the whole community get together and we're going to work together and come up with a thing. And it shows everybody working together. It shows the thing. And, you know, it was way more, there was way more subtlety to it, an interesting three-dimensional human character arc versus Hollywood two-dimensional stereotypes saying cliche things in this format we've seen a million times. I thought that's what the trailer, I was like, all right, like I've seen this before. But it was really, and you know, from what I can tell, and maybe there's more research to do about it, I didn't really read, but it seems like they tried to do a good job of trying to keep it as accurate as they could. They didn't, you know, rewrite it like the Kevin Costner Hidden Figures white savior moment where he knocks down the bathroom thing that didn't really happen. So
you gotta have those Hollywood moments.
Yeah, I mean, it has one or two towards the end, some Hollywood moments where I'm like, okay. But it felt more accurate. And then not really a spoiler alert, but most biopics during the credits, they do something. They show a photo or show the actual people or whatever. And some of the stuff they did there, interviews with the actual people, were really kind of interesting. And so it seems like a pretty interesting source. It was better. Both of these movies were better than I thought they were going to be. Now, granted, you're just starving to get through a flight. So And, you know, it's most of the movies on an airplane are ones I've seen because I watch a lot of films, obviously, and these two, and I'm glad I went. They're worth watching. Mm-hmm. Did they, you know, were they shunned by the Oscars? Nah, I don't know if they deserved Oscar nominations, but they're good, well-made movies that are more than the trailer led on to be.
And they were good plane movies.
Very good plane movies.
Okay.
So I would recommend both Best of Enemies and The Front Runner. The great performances by all parties involved in both movies, and more interesting and subtle than you would think.
Right. Mm-hmm. So check them out. Most likely they'll end up being streaming very soon.
They're somewhere. If they're not a VOD or streaming, they will be.
Well, that's interesting about Front Runner.
They're generally somewhere else.
Yes, if you're seeing it on a plane, there's some.
Yeah, one of my old jokes is, you know your film's in trouble when you see it on the airliner on the way to the premiere.
Right?
Yeah, they just grabbed a quick license fee just to cover some losses.
I got to pay the losses.
So, well, I got to see It Chapter 2
I
over
wanted
the
to see this, but I flew home Monday and I was exhausted.
Where from?
I was doing a progressive comedy with Ron Placone, and we had done Omaha, Sioux Falls, Madison, Minneapolis, and Iowa City, which was great, but it was so much driving. We saw Bernie speak at Iowa campus. I shook his hand, which was really cool.
Oh, that's cool.
But I got home Monday, and I was wiped out.
Well, I mean, that's not like the kind of movie that you, when you're wiped, I'm like, oh, what? Scary clown movie that's almost 3 hours long. Perfect.
Yeah. I'm a little fried from travel. Like, I need a 3 hour.
3 hour scary
nightmare.
Clown movie. Yeah, pretty much. Now, this movie, it's interesting. This movie, when I was watching it, first of all, of course, anyone who doesn't say it's too long is lying. There's no horror movie, no matter what it's about, should be 3 hours long. It's a simple matter of emotional mathematics. You know, you can't...
bladder math, man. I'm 65. It's bladder math.
You can't...
I can't take it.
Yeah.
I'm hashtag emotional mathematics.
You cannot sustain fear in the audience for that long without them getting exhausted. No one has or can produce that much adrenaline for that long of amount of time. So, you know, granted you have the ups and downs, but you know it's like it was so formulaic. It was up, down, up, down, up, down until we got to the end. And this chapter two was more of a typical Stephen King adaptation. That is not a compliment. That means that it was disjointed. It was messy. It went, you know, structurally it had problems. Like, I really felt like the first one kind of hit it out of the park. It really did. I thought it was structured really nicely. It was scary. It was interesting. It had great casting and characters.
I thought the
first one was really good. And
I really liked the Tim Curry one. So,
the TV miniseries. I remember that.
I liked his Pennywise a lot.
With Harry Anderson and John Boy.
Yeah, I think Skarsgård is great too.
Yeah. And so this movie, it really just, like the first one, really just, it felt like, it was tight. It was a concise story. Everything worked. And I felt like that was more the outlier than this one. Like, I felt all the everything they did right, they kind of let go on the second one, which was weird. It really felt like, oh, we've got to add this in. Oh, we've got to add this in. We've got to add every little piece of the book. And no, you don't. They are different things. The book and the movie are different. You don't have to put every single beat, because what happens is you have a bloated, overly long movie that is up and down with scares, and then until you finally get to the end, that it was completely unsatisfying. So I think we might do a little spoiler rant at the for the Patreon people. So the main problem with this film was basically the length, because if you would have had a shorter film, it would have forced the filmmakers to make a more coherent and cohesive story, because the entire structure of the 3 hours was, all right, we're older, we're going back to Derry to fight the clown again, he's back, so now we're going to do flashbacks when we were a kid, we're going to get scared. We're going to do things as an adult, we're going to get scared. And then it was the dumbest thing is like, all right, we all have to split up and find these tokens from our childhood. And I'm looking at the screen going, there's like 5 to 7 characters. That's going to take forever. Mm. And it did. because there was nothing
thoroughly
skipped.
Follow each character,
to get, you know, and all the storylines were the same. Oh. You know, you get scared, you get your childhood token, you come back, and then it was almost like a video game fetch quest. It was.
I don't know how it worked.
Yeah.
Which one is that?
Yeah.
What's the goal of Fetch Quest?
The Fetch Quest is basically you're in a video game. It's a.
Yeah. You know how to play. I don't know.
You have a main quest, like, you know, save the princess or whatever, but sure. A fetch quest is you have to go through all the different lands and get a piece of a pottery, and then you make, like, a vase at the end.
Oh, okay.
So, but it takes forever.
You go on an Easter egg hunt.
Yeah, pretty much, pretty much.
Scavenger hunt.
Yeah, scavenger hunt. So, okay. it was really messy. If you liked the first one, you're like, well, it was okay. Now, I will say this. The scares, it was scary. It was creative. You know, I'm always baffled by the people that are like, it wasn't really that scary or creepy. Well, no, it was. There was just too much of it. You know, especially at the beginning, this is, you know, there's a lot of controversy at the beginning because there's a gay couple. And one of them gets, basically, it's a hate crime. He gets brutally beaten and then thrown over the bridge. And this is right in the beginning of the film, so it's not a spoiler. But then Pennywise eats him. So... in the book, it was much more relevant to make the comment about tolerance and hate crimes and all of those things. But in the movie, because everything is just so kind of disjointed, it just didn't belong. And it felt like it was a thrown-in story because it didn't really tie into the rest of the film. They tried to tie it into the rest of the film.
Because you don't follow these guys.
Because, right. No, they were it was just two completely random people.
So they start everything and you don't follow them, right?
Right. So that, and they try to tie it in. I'm like, well, wait, what about, you know, maybe there's a gay storyline with one of our main characters. I'm like, but that doesn't matter. That's not, that doesn't tie into, you know, this entire amount of time that we spent, you know, establishing this in the beginning. So, because especially when you have basically a part two of the film, you need to get into it immediately with these characters that we left off on the first one. You know, all these different tangents and weird things going on with it don't concern the main characters because everything that concerns the main characters is already too long. And then you're adding on top of that. So, I don't know. It was a really, it was a missed opportunity. And I felt like it was just kind of this bloated mess that, it also felt rushed. It was like it was rushed out too soon because they had to get it in the theaters, you know, right at, you know, after the next one. So I would have liked to have seen the filmmaker take it a little more time with it and not be beholden to all these other
you bring up a great point, which is I think we all had – I did it. We talked about it on the show after the first it came out how much we loved it and what the potential for the sequel is going to be. Yep. There are kids and they got to go back. I'm like, oh, man, this could be great.
Yeah.
And when you rush it, you still need to spend the time on a competent adaptation because a book and a movie are two different things. And you can't go off on all the tangents that a book does. You
not
just
every
can't do
page
it.
Should be in the movie.
No, right. You can't do it. And
that's like a guy who says, only my true story is funny in comedy. And he tells it, and it's not as good as anyone else's act, but it's true.
Yeah.
But I thought truth was funny. Yeah. Sorry about that. I didn't mean to knock your iPad over. Yeah, but I thought the truth was funny. Mm-hmm. And it's that harsh realization. That's the art form is how to, or some of it is presentation. I mean, watch a cooking YouTube.
And but I also then see the value of this podcast because now, Chris, I'm not going to go waste my 3 hours on this movie.
Yes, exactly. I've saved you some time.
And I love Bill Hader. I got to say, I love Bill Hader. I think Barry is brilliant. He and Henry are brilliant. And, you know, you do a movie on your downtime, and I'm sure it's going to do fine. But.
And, you know, Bill Hader, he went up to Bill Skarsgård, who plays Pennywise, and he asked him what editing was done to achieve that weird effect that, you know, how, like, he can make one eye move independently, which makes him even creepier as a clown. And turns out Bill Skarsgård can do that in real life. Oh, it wasn't an effect. And he said, oh, you mean this? And Hader like freaked out.
Yeah, that's the thing that's disappointing because I do love the casting of this movie. And
it's a great cast, and they're all wonderful performers.
Yes. Yeah, and you want it to be great. It's like
it's a little hard to hear James McAvoy do an American accent, but other than that,
But I mean, if any really of us got an offer to be in that film, you go yes,
yeah,
yeah, of course.
And you'll do the 3 hour film, and then you know you got the story.
Yeah, and James McAvoy, this was a funny trivia thing. Injured himself for real during his character fight scenes with Pennywise, suffering a double thigh strain. Is that really an injury? Wow. A double thigh strain? I think there's worse injuries that have happened on sets. So, but they there was a couple other things that
that's the name of a band.
Did. And this is another double thigh strain.
Ladies and gentlemen,
we've got two bases.
That's our difference with this group. Extra bass.
Now, this is one of the other reasons too. The first movie worked so well with the kids Bill Sarsgaard said he had more fun on set during this movie because he actually got to talk to and hang out with the adults. They had minimal contact with the co-stars because the director wanted to keep them separate, so they would generally be scared of him when they saw him on set. So, which is interesting too, because that's the other thing. Like, I was trying to figure out like what else was wrong, and the first movie just felt more genuine. Like this one just felt like kind of rushed and like and just almost like contrived in parts.
Did it feel
too
posed?
It totally felt posed.
Staged,
yeah,
posed.
Yeah, it really did. Whereas
you
the first
do the thing
didn't.
Where you look like this, as yeah. opposed to the overall, we know
yes.
this person for so long. They didn't give them enough time to really figure out who they ought to be in all of this, do you think?
Yeah.
They're so good, you'd think they'd be able to just knock it out of the park, because I don't think any of it is their fault.
No, no, it wasn't. It was the material. Like, all the actors tried to do their best with what they had to work with.
Yeah, but that's the thing, man. But, as an actor, I can tell you.
Yeah.
But sometimes you just get that page. You go, oh.
Yeah, because but all, they only
how do you make this real?
They literally only had two things to do: be scared, and then find this childhood thing that you're looking for, and then that was it. I mean, so there wasn't a
so
lot
that didn't
more
feel
to do.
Real to you. This
yeah,
time?
Isn't that weird?
Yeah,
but because if you.
Is it a kid's fear versus an adult's fear?
You know,
the dynamic.
All that stuff. I expected to be explored more in this movie because that's really interesting. Like, as are you afraid as a child?
Rationality,
and that
tries
you know,
to...
and that's coming back to haunt you as an adult. There's all sorts of interesting explorations you could do. Everything from childhood fears to trauma to mental illness. Like, there's all these really mm-hmm. interesting angles this could have gone.
Adulthood stuff
yes.
that comes out
yeah.
that's different from the kids.
Yeah, and
separate whole thing of fears now.
Yeah, and but it was just like random stuff. It's like, oh yeah, he's you know he's scared of. Clowns. He's spared, you know, he sees these. It's a funhouse. He's scared. And, you know, it was all like, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a bummer.
So, yeah, it was a shame, but it was, you know, it did.
Steven's films run into this problem sometimes.
Oh, for sure. That's why I was saying this felt like more of a Stephen King
adaptation. We heard this routine yeah. now with Stephen King film with what do you do out of the book and what do you
right.
do to save
yeah.
your movie?
You know, and this yeah. felt more like Pet Sematary, unfortunately.
Oh, dear.
So, but yeah. But it was, you know, I would say go watch the first one again.
Yeah,
or
go see Fred Gwynne.
Yeah.
In Pet Sematary. Yeah. Go see Herman Munster, not yeah. beef Herman Munster.
Christ on his throne,
yeah.
no.
Yeah. So go see It Chapter 1, and then when you're going to see Chapter 2, I recommend it with the fast forward button.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you skim past to the
yeah,
big scary stuff.
Yeah, until the end, which will just make you angry. You sat in 3 hours in the theater.
Wow. You didn't. You skimmed.
So, yeah. Yeah, so you'll feel better about it. So, all right. Those are our new releases. Graham, we've got some Patreon
well,
sponsors.
Well, thank you so much, folks.
Oh, and I want to thank you guys, too. Now that we announced we weren't, we're closing up shop in December, thank you for not pulling all the money out of the Patreon. We appreciate it. It'll really help us with all the closeout costs and wrapping up the company. And we are more than happy and very excited to still read your properties and your podcasts and your, you know, everything, your IPs, whatever you have, we are happy to still promote it through December.
And that, yeah, that'll go through December. Mm-hmm. So the last, you'll be, if you can be a Patreon all the way in through the end of November, and then you'll be, those November patrons will be charged December 1st. And your rewards will go through December, and
yes.
then that'll be done.
And then we'll shut it yeah. off. Yeah. So you
won't be able to be a patron after December 1st.
Correct. No one will be charged for January. So Johnny Rulon, he still has his novel titled Green Cheek, A Junkie's Guide to Street Magic. It's on Amazon, both digital and hard copy. It's an experimental stream of consciousness novel which follows the exploits of the muse Calliope and her mortal lover T.S. on a journey through time, dreams, and the hidden places of a supernatural America. The website is happyhorrorshowproductions.com, happyhorrorshowproductions.com. Fanboy Planet, a website and podcast for all things geeky and amazing. Check out Fanboy Planet for your comics news, your movie news, TV news, and amazing interviews with industry insiders and artists. Fanboyplanet.com, fanboyplanet.com. And from Chris Parker Howard, Coffee Over Suicide, a dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. New episodes every Friday, wherever podcasts are found. Find out more at coffeeoversuicide.com, coffeeoversuicide.com. Alice Frazier, co-host of the Bugle podcast and host of Tea with Alice, brings you a series of three genre-bending solo stand-up shows that explore the boundary between comedy and tragedy. The shows were recorded back-to-back as a three-hour show in the Melbourne International Comedy Festival with a binaural microphone, which creates an intensely immersive listening experience. AliceFrazier.com. And the art podcast with Rebecca Evans. We move past hesitation. We're true to ourselves. We find our own art in life. New episode with John S. Drew, host of the Shazam Isis podcast, Batcave podcast, and more. TheArtPodcasts.com with an S. And Tony McFadden's 14th book. He's written 14 books.
That's Grant. A lot of books, Tony.
Yeah. It's a gritty Australian noir, The Murder of Jeremy Brooks, pits small-town Australian PI Dan McGuinness against corporate greed and corruption. A Sydney surgeon hires Dan to find her husband's killer. The cops think it was a mugging gone bad. She thinks it was a hit. More info at TonyMcFadden.net/JB. So check those out. It was really interesting, Tony. We went to your Amazon page, and just the list of your 14 books came up. So we are happy to help out. We want to make sure you guys know that we are going to be doing these all the way through December, like Graham said. And we are happy to have you guys along with the final part of the journey with us. So thank you so much. We really appreciate the support. All right. So we are going to talk about some movie trailers now. Are we yes. having technical difficulties? No, we're good.
Okay. Why don't you talk about this while I cue this up? Why don't you?
Absolutely. The first one we're going to talk about is The Joker. Now, the interesting thing about The Joker, the new trailer, is people have already seen the film, and reviews are coming in, and they've been generally positive because this film is actually playing film festivals. So reports are coming in from festivals that, and again, this is a marketing ploy for the studio. It's like, well, we want to get some early buzz. Let's see if we can play some festivals. Now, the thing I don't like about that is that it takes a spot away from an actual independent filmmaker that really needs the festival, because Warner Brothers generally doesn't need the extra publicity.
Yeah. Well, let's watch this, and we'll watch this, and I'm talking about something I was watching this morning of some of the fallout of reaction from some of the screenings of this film at the some of the festivals.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, okay, let's do it. This is Joker, final trailer.
The final trailer.
I'll give Joaquin Phoenix a lot of credit. He really creepied himself up for this movie.
Please stop bothering my kid.
Sorry.
Arthur. I have some bad news for you. This is the last time we'll be meeting.
You don't listen, do you? You just ask the same questions every week. How's your job? Are you having any negative thoughts? All I have are negative thoughts.
He was this skinny already for a while.
Finally, in a world where everyone thinks they can do the cult my job, joined. Check out this guy.
When I was a little boy Master. And told people I was going to be a comedian, everyone laughed at me.
There is definite ties to King of Comedy in this film, too. Wow. Yeah. Which is really interesting.
Sure. This is switcheroo.
Yeah, yeah.
He's the other guy.
Yep.
But it's supposed to be we get the best, bigger message.
Right. Uh-huh.
It's so awful, isn't it?
For my whole life, I didn't know if I even really existed. But I do. And people are starting to notice.
You think this is funny? Is this a joke to you?
No, like Batman, Joker does not have superpowers.
Murray, one small thing.
Yeah.
When you bring me out, can you introduce me as Joker?
Or is it R?
I don't know.
No, they haven't.
De Niro's always been fascinated with comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah, for
he
sure.
He dabbles in it here and they played a comedian, you know, an insult comic. And he's always had it in his blood.
Analyze this. Mm-hmm.
So some people have already seen this movie because it's played at some festivals. And there's already been some, there's been a little backlash.
on the film itself?
Yeah, because they're like, it's, a white male that has been beaten down by society who uses violence, and this movie is glamorizing violence. I haven't seen it. I have only seen these trailers, right. But it's starting to
sympathy for the devil.
Yeah,
that this is the sad story of how someone became evil.
Yeah,
yeah, right.
So it's like, I'm curious to watch it to see what this is about. Obviously, that trailer is really intriguing to me.
It's better than the first trailer.
Oh my God!
For sure.
And I didn't know anything about the De Niro thing, and so
I'm actually interested in seeing it now after the
totally
next trailer.
See it.
Yeah,
his work. I don't miss his work. Doesn't matter what.
Yeah,
I don't miss any of his work.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I don't know. Like,
it's brilliant.
Somebody, and I was watching this debate on the news this morning, and one guy, a filmmaker, was like, "Well, first of all, if the people who haven't seen the movie who are just like, this is awful, Hollywood, he's like, well, that's preposterous. You got to watch the movie, and we shouldn't censor this. We should just, if you don't like it, don't watch it. But also, the violence that's happening in the world, we need to address that.
Right.
not necessarily blame Hollywood. Now, I'm not absolving Hollywood of some of its responsibility for its portrayal of things, but to put it all on the shoulders of a movie is
preposterous.
It's preposterous. Yes. It is preposterous.
Yeah. It's like blaming, Jill Stein for
right. It is.
2016. Like, Susan Sarandon. You look stupid and crazy. You look croupid.
Oh. And that's, yes. There was there. And this happens when a movie comes in, then all of a sudden everyone's got an opinion on a movie that they haven't seen.
They haven't seen. Go watch the movie.
So, mm-hmm.
Look, I mean, and the, then the, like, if it throttles into some big boycott thing, watch the movie first. If you watch the movie and there's deliberate offensive things or that, then don't watch it, or just say, I'm not going to watch it, because the over protesting and this, that gets into censorship. And I'm totally against that, because there's plenty, the best censorship you have is just not
seeing something.
Don't watch it. Don't subscribe to it. Like,
I remember my father said, the best censor you have is your finger.
Yeah.
You just shut it off.
Just shut it off. It's like, I spoke at this, this Minds event a week or so ago, and there was some right-wing journalists on it, and there was some, I don't know if it was actually Antifa or whatever, but they threatened to blow up the theater, and they had to move events and all this stuff. And the event still went on, and I got to speak, and I got to put my lefty socialist progressive message out in front of an audience of primarily libertarians and center-right people, many of whom went, oh, he's making some good points. And the thing I say is, had this group or people or individuals that threatened to blow it up been successful at shutting this thing down, these people would not have heard what I had to say. And, if there's some YouTuber or right-wing journalist or that you don't like, just don't watch him. I don't watch Alex Jones.
Yeah.
I don't follow him. I don't, I don't listen to Bill O'Reilly's podcast. I don't, I just don't do it.
There's some very easily.
I'm sure he
is. He's with it. I'm with the kids,
It's like, where do people listen to this?
I use up and down rhythm in my voice to hypnotize you.
Yeah.
So now the controversy just makes me want to see it a little bit more, because, a lot of times when controversy comes out before a movie comes out, it's just, people running around with like chickens with their heads cut off. Like,
the studio's hey.
Yeah, I heard
controversy sometimes helps get asses in seats.
Yes,
I heard I should be offended by this, so let me do the marketing for you.
Yeah.
That's actually pretty handy these days.
Yeah.
And it's like a roller coaster that somebody got injured on. People are like, oh shit, now I gotta ride this, you know?
Like, it's gotta be intense.
I gotta see who else buys it when I'm on there.
So, and a lot of times too, and this might be just because we're in the business and we, we see a lot of content. We'll probably watch it and go, who are people so upset over?
Yeah, I know.
I don't get why people were this.
I could name a dozen movies that are worse,
Well, so much artificial outrage out there now.
Yeah.
Sometimes
yeah.
people, they're just nuts and they're privileged and they think they can vent on anything. And they get to.
Right.
And then we get to say this about it.
Right.
I mean, this is the other half of it all. You get to do that and then we get to do this.
Yep.
You get to say, and we get to say what we want about it.
So, yeah, I would recommend, I mean, it's coming out soon, isn't it, like next month?
October.
Yeah, or October. So, it's the kind of movie that, too, that DC movies have had such a troubled past because they've been awful, you know, a lot of them. You know, this, you know, Wonder Woman, you know, kind of turned that around a little bit, but, you know, these movies have a, I don't want to say a high bar because the bar is very low. They've already got a hole to dig themselves out of. So if this one is a little more artistic and interesting and takes some chances and does something different with a character that we've known for many, many years, I'm all for it. I think it'd be great, and it would be really interesting to see a different take, as long as it doesn't screw too much with the DNA, like the way you know, Christopher Nolan's Batman was. You know, they were different than the canon or yep. you know, the characters, but they didn't screw with the Batman's DNA as a character. And I thought it was just a really interesting, cool, different interpretation. I'm hoping that that's what this is.
Yeah, it doesn't screw with the Joker's DNA, which right. is he's, you know...
He's still a psychopath.
He's a psychopath yeah. at the end
he
of the day.
He doesn't get the dip in the bath.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then chemical dip parts out, and now it's just protracted abuse. Well,
you know what, though? Yep. However, we don't know that he doesn't get the dip in the bath yet, because that still may happen, even though it may not turn him white.
He paints his face.
That's okay. You know, there might be a different interpretation of that event that happens.
Bathed in society.
Yeah, or something, or like it'll be some kind of chemical that, you know, doesn't necessarily change his skin, or, but it could be something yeah. a different, some or, type of event that's similar.
Or it's well, all we'll of the out. Things that lead up to that, so that when that final... Either it's the bath or the two conflicting stories in The Dark Knight of how mm-hmm. he got the scars on his
right.
face.
Mm-hmm.
One of those, like, so all these series of things of him getting pushed around and abandoned and shoved and not appreciated, and then this one tipping point. And maybe yeah. that'll be the end
That's
of the movie.
Catalyst.
You see all the things that right. led up to the one event that we already kind of know
and
happens.
And everything else starts right at the end of the movie that yeah. we know is the start.
I'm going to yes. give you the perfect ending of this film. I'm sure they didn't do it, but this is what it was.
All right.
The Joker at the end picks up a playing card that has Batman on it.
Yeah. yeah, this whole thing happened yeah. to him, and then he just watches the yeah. news about Batman.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know?
I'm the only makeup super person yeah. in this town. You don't get to wear a get-up and be another one.
So I hope there's some cool Easter eggs in the movie, too. Like, little, like I, you know, clearly there's not going to be any superheroes in it. That's not the point. But if there's, like, news footage or a new, you know, just the way the, like, even Shazam had, like, he had, like, a batarang in his room. Like, stuff like that would be kind of cool.
You know, the
like,
dynamic little, that we'll see shifting is the moment, they'll either have this moment or they won't, that will really define when Joker becomes everybody else's Joker, is when he isn't just taking revenge on the ones who are mean to him mm-hmm. and just starts hitting random people.
Yeah.
Then he becomes the other guy. Because other than that, it's just a kind of relatable revenge story. You
right.
know, I screw those people
you know,
doing that.
You know what it reminds me of? Do you guys remember a Mike Douglas movie a couple years ago called Falling Down?
Yes.
Yeah.
Where it was just a series of things where he just literally could not take it anymore, and then he snaps.
Mike's, yeah, Mike loses it and then mm-hmm. gets a bat and a gun. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So this really kind of feels like that to me.
Yeah.
It's like it's a series of like, all right, you know, I'm trying my best, but everything is going horribly wrong. It's not me that's crazy, it's the world, which is how the Joker sees things anyway. So I think it could be interesting.
This new trailer makes me want to see it even more, I got to be honest with you.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. The next trailer is Dr. Sleep. This is speaking of Stephen King, a long-awaited sequel to The Shining.
When I was a kid.
By the way, Stephen King, not happy with what Stanley Kubrick did with The Shining.
Yeah.
And guess what? Stanley Kubrick made a cohesive, coherent, and a chilling horror movie without putting every single thing in the book from it.
Hello, Danny.
They come back.
Well, look, the news got on.
Yeah.
Oh, they're all grown up.
Yeah. They're still twins in the creepy outfits.
I'm in the bus this far north. You're running.
Is that Derry? Oh no, it's, you know, all Stephen King small towns in New England look the same.
Right.
I'm running away from myself, I guess.
Hi. You can hear me. You're magic.
Stephen King's getting a real resurgence.
Magic. I always called it The Shining.
heaven.
The world is a hungry place. A dangerous place.
I tell you, you kind of bring her.
These people, they hurt people like us.
These empty devils, they'll eat what
you They're shining vampires.
They look like Cajun voodoo witches.
That little girl.
Well, hi there.
Yeah. Get out of my head! Get out!
I haven't felt power like that in so long.
They're coming. Where are we
Witch.
Going?
Got the shining in there. Got the shining
place. You sure you
want to
do
this?
I'm ready.
Most likely, they were
yes,
digital.
And then I will find you, and you will scream for years.
Come and play with us forever and ever.
I don't want to see this.
Yeah.
Whenever you do the... at the end.
At the end. Yeah.
The problem with it is it becomes like Trinity suspended in midair and rotating the camera around. It was amazing the first 10 times I saw that somewhere.
Yeah. All horror movie trailers are cut the exact same way.
There's a spray stencil.
Yeah, yeah. And it, for the sound, too. Like the music stabs, they're all exactly the same.
So, it seems like, so it takes The Shining and all the subtle... slow-moving, creepy, tense moments and just makes them big and crazy and bloody and
turns
arms.
Turns them into jump scares.
Bigger wasn't the point.
No.
No, and Kubrick understood that when he made that film.
No, man. There's nothing creepy about a dude in a mask or a knife or any of that stuff. It's creepy when you know somebody and they change personalities on you.
Just a
Jack is getting nastier and meaner, that's scary because we all relate. We all know somebody who did that. That's the only relatable horror thing there is.
And then you walk down a long, creepy hallway and there's just two girls in dresses. If that's not the scariest, that's 10 times creepier than some guy with fangs and a knife and bloody. Like those two girls just going, hey, we want to play with that. It's fucking terrifying.
Yeah, you're looking the lady in the tub.
Yeah.
Right.
She can't really hurt you.
Yeah.
She's not going to kill you. She's going to rot in front of you.
Yeah,
and that's scarier
terrifying.
Than her trying to do any real harm to you.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So now I will say this, being the issues we've had with trailers lately, I wonder if that trailer isn't representative of the film or if the film is those more subtle and building scares, whether it's all jump scares.
Yeah, I hope so. I'm going to give it a chance, but I don't know.
But it did seem there was a bit of Buffy the Vampire Slayer in here. It's like we got to go after the shining vampires and top hats. Okay.
crazy hats in the woods.
That was scary as hell. The grinning guys that Doug Jones played.
Yeah, yeah.
Splendid. I'm just glad they didn't do that last scene where the camera's on the floor and you're looking into the camera and, you're dragged away backwards.
Yeah,
man,
right.
If I see the drag away one more damn time, guys, come up with a new thing to do to them.
It's the drag away or they close the mirror and there's the
guy is in the mirror shot.
Yeah, yeah.
The cat's in the cupboard.
Yeah.
What's a cat doing locked in your meow coming out of the cupboard?
Yeah, how do you get in there?
A hand.
What sicko puts a cat in there?
How do you get in there and then close the door behind him?
Get rid of the food. The cat's peeing and crapping on all your food supplies. For revenge. So. Cats are vengeful.
All right.
All right. So we want to mention, too, the store is closing out. That'll be closed probably around December 15th. So if there's anything you want, please, everything is discounted. Check it out. We have signed DVDs, signed books. We have some shirts left. We have, with the new logo, we have all shirts... all sizes available right now. The older shirts, there's only select sizes left. So go
the
into
collector's
the cart.
Items. We'll never make these again.
That is true. So go into the cart and then put your size in and it'll tell you if it's available or not yet. But check it out. I want to thank you guys that have already taken advantage and shipped stuff out. I only have a couple more orders to ship and then we're caught up. So ready for the next wave and round of people ordering the closeout. So thank you guys there as well. All right, DVD and Blu-ray. We have Aladdin. Boy, this couldn't get to DVD fast enough.
That went quick.
I think this was right in the theaters, like, what, a month ago or something like that? That's what it felt like.
Yep.
I'm like, look, we just
live
got a
action.
Clear house. Yeah, yeah. We got
a live action of a cartoon.
Yeah, yeah.
Prepare the bin.
Yeah.
Ready the bin, baby.
Pretty much.
Clear the hard drive space for the VOD.
Yeah.
There you go. Boy, yeah. You don't ever learn, do you? Mm-hmm.
John Wick, Chapter 3, Parabellum. Certainly, this is basically it's a James Bond formula. You like the first one, you want to see more shooting and punching and knifing, you're going to get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This is, it is now, what it is.
The trick is going to be for 4. You can't do all the same flip moves on the guy where it goes at the overshoulder, ipinage, boom, and then the shoot and all that. They're going to have to be a whole new dynamic for 4.
You would think that.
Add a person. Add a person or somebody or something else, a sidekick or whatever. You know, I guarantee you 4, they're going to try and add somebody.
Well,
what
one,
do you boys think?
I agree.
Well, 3, we had Halle Berry and dogs, so now maybe it'll be...
Yeah, they got to make a partner now, because that's what you have to do when there's too many of one human doing one human thing too many times.
I think it's either a partner or he, like, rescues a kid, but the kid was trained in a special...
Yeah,
it might be a kid. It might be Chris Pratt and a penguin. We don't know. That's the last.
Talking penguin.
Yes.
Who's got an attitude?
Yeah.
He's in your face.
Yeah.
I'm a penguin. Don't you think I know that?
All right.
So, but you know there's going to be a 4th one. It's
totally
going
to have to be a 4th one, but I'm just saying, you need an older middle-aged man who turns out knows a little bit of Krav Maga and surprises everybody because they thought the old fart couldn't take care of himself. Turns out he can.
Came out of retirement?
He came out of retirement. There's no one knows the history on this guy. He's just the meanest, dirtiest fighter in the universe.
We just weren't sure if he was too old for this shit.
That's right. It turns out he's just right.
Perfect.
So he's got a special set of skills.
He's got a special set of skills. And you never know what to look at him.
Yeah.
He's just sort of farting around.
Yeah. But then as we walked into his house, we'll find a suspiciously placed Medal of Honor, something like that.
Yeah, he'll just...
Yeah,
I was thinking about that. I thought, no, get rid of anything that has any record. There's no explanation for why he's the most dirty, vicious fighter on the face of the...
There's just maybe one line of like, well, that's how we did things in Bosnia or something like that. outside of Kabul, this is how we handle the problem.
I got it. Mission Serbia rules. Got it.
He's it. And his name is Searle Downright.
Check out
John Wick 4 coming to a theater near you.
John Wick. I enjoyed the other 3. I certainly did.
The Downright years. Yeah. The Searle Downright.
John Wick 4.
Searle Downright. Yeah.
Down from Downright.
You want another taste? He's always based on that guy from YouTube. I'm going to hurt you. I'm going to hurt you. See that guy? And knocks the guy out. Old guy messing with the old gun. Out he goes. All right.
And the other film is The Dead Don't Die. This is the Jim Jarmusch zombie movie. I really want to see this movie.
Yeah.
I haven't had a chance to yet, but anything with Adam Driver and Bill Murray. I'm ready for this. And the funniest thing, I see the same comment about this film over and over again, and it's, if Jim Jarmusch would make a zombie movie, this is what it would be. But that's like the review. It's a Jim Jarmusch zombie movie.
Action mixed with glib understatement.
Yeah, if you know what that means, you are going to want to go see that movie.
Methodical dialogue.
Methodical, social message heavy dialogue. You've come to the right film.
Premiering this week, we have The Goldfinch.
Yeah.
And this was based on a best-selling book. A kid loses his parents from a terrorist bombing at the New York Museum of Art, and then it's his kind of journey reconciling with that. And then apparently there's another journey where he goes everywhere. That's not quite clear what he's doing from the trailer. Like, if we watch the trailer again, you're like, I think I know what's going on, but I'm not quite sure. It's a very convoluted trailer.
He's like a goldfinch. He's just flying all over the place.
Yeah, pretty much. So it does look interesting. I'm curious to see kind of how it unfolds and what the story actually is as he kind of goes on this journey. And the next movie is Hustlers. There seems to be a new genre of film where a diverse cast of women gets fed up with society and become criminals.
Yep.
That seems to be a new genre or trend of film, because this really just looks like The Kitchen, like every other movie that we've seen.
Widows.
Yeah, that has come out like this.
9 to 5 plus.
Yes. Yeah.
push to the limit.
Yeah.
And they're going to have a little playful revenge.
And what's... what's unfortunate is that they all seem to hit the same beats that, like, the derivative male-driven casts do. I'm like, well, no, show me something different. This is supposed to be a different perspective, a different story.
It's the same thing. There's always some guy going, hey, why don't you girls get back in the kitchen?
Yeah,
you
know, and it's like, well, no, just, right. Oh, my God. Just, you know, if you're going to show something new, actually show something new. So,
well, it's got a little dash of the Dirty Rotten Scoundrels in there, right?
Right.
And so there's the comedy of them playing a dynamic like it was played off between those two.
And it's, you know, strippers.
One is good at it, the other's klutz at it and fucks the game up. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Screws the game
up. Oh, no, you're sorry. You can curse.
Just don't say game.
Yeah, yeah. And... They did the female.
No, so it's a similar dynamic,
yes,
right?
Yes. And the same people who went to see the movie remake Overboard went to see that film, which was no one.
No one.
So
oh dear.
So yeah, Hustlers is basically about some quote loosely based on a true story about strippers that take advantage of
rich Wall Street guys.
Yeah. So, but, you know, Jennifer Lopez, I believe, is in the film. And, but it, again, it's like you could interchange any of these trailers and they would be showing the exact same
Widows thing. Was a good film. That was interesting. And then The Kitchen, and then they all started to, like, it's like when Taken came out and then there's all these.
Then there's 100 Takens. There's 100 Takens. Yeah. Yeah. Right. So, hey, Hollywood, stop chasing a trend.
Come on. Yeah, do something original.
Kevin Rooney had the most brilliant line about that. He said, Hollywood always runs to where lightning just struck.
Right.
Waiting for it to hit again.
Yeah. Yep.
So insightful. Mm-hmm.
So, all right. That is our show. Put it in the books. Wrap it up. Rick, we did have a last-minute cancellation. I want to thank you for coming in last minute for the show.
Thanks a lot.
Much appreciated. Episode 481. Closer to episode 600.
Yes, it is. Rick, where can people find you online? Any upcoming shows or anything like
that? Well, I just finished shooting a one-hour, totally improvised set list comedy special.
Nice.
That's never been done before. So we're just at Emery, the man is cutting it together, the comedy editor of all time. And so he's putting it together, and then we're going to try and put it on the market and sell it. Rick Overton's official, never seen before, improvised comedy special.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. We got to shorten the name, but that's the word.
We'll see. Yeah, it's kind of catchy.
All right. It's hard to introduce yourself into the market at 65 when you were, you know, I was busy on HBO for a while, but I let it go to do acting, and now I'm not trying to find something interesting to say, yeah, but can they do this?
Good.
And then see my improvised set. You know what set list is. They project on a screen next to you the topics, and then you go off and act like that was your show. So that's what I got. And I don't have any other set. I'm going to be doing Comedy Day. When does this go up? Later today?
Yep. Later today, yes.
Later today. So I'm doing Comedy Day on Sunday up in San Francisco.
Oh, great.
And Robin Williams Meadow. And that's like the gigs right now.
Awesome. Now, do you have anything coming out, like movies or TVs? Like,
I got it's called The Unicorn.
The Unicorn.
Kids film.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be out on Netflix.
Awesome.
Oh, great.
And the early 20.
Oh, awesome. Did a voice?
What's that?
Did a voice or was it live action?
I'm a bad guy. I'm a bad guy who wants to take the unicorn from the little girl.
Oh, that's great.
How dare you, Brian?
Branscombe Richmond's in there, and you know, I don't know how you could, buddies.
I don't know how you could live with yourself by doing a role like that, Rick.
Yeah. I can live with the medical and dental.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that much, baby.
I'll take those.
Oh, it's a lovely film. It's a lot of fun. You know what? And in these films, and I worked with Nancy Leopardi before, she books me on films that are sweet, innocent. They don't have any of that other cynical stuff. It just kind of simple dialogue. And it just feels so good to do, like as a release. Just kids should see this and not that other mind-weird stuff, you know?
So what's the difference? Now, I'm just sad that you're taking a unicorn away from a child, but I have to say...
Oh, she wins. She does the whole, you know, Home Alone
spoiler alert. Spoiler alert, yeah. But what, like when you play a villain, just as kind of a side note real quick, like, do you... like look at other villains, like from superhero movies or something, or like, what do you draw on for that, like, as for like a kid's villain?
You know, a basic library of what other guys had done. You don't want to do that, you know.
Right.
Like when I was an Eight-Legged Freaks, I was really, they wanted me to be like an Barney Fife kind of guy.
Oh, God.
And I was like, yeah, but they know that. They'll kill me for that. I got to be my own dude here. Come up with all his little idiosyncratic things and say he's this different guy. And
we just saw that again recently. It's a
yeah,
fun movie.
Yeah. You know, I had to. You know, I was really thinking about that. I don't want to be downhearted. I don't want to get the comparison. Mm-hmm. No one nailed me on that. So, yeah, I think when you're a bad guy, you're looking at, like when I was doing The Informant, I had to think about. They say, do you like, you got to do something you like about your character. I can't like this guy. He's a real guy. He was a POS. He was a piece of shit.
Oh, awesome.
But I liked how I played him.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't wait. That. I can't wait to see it because, you know, I still, my kids are still young enough to enjoy.
That's right for them, man. This is a movie they're like going to, how old are your kids now?
So they're 11 and 14, but yeah, my 11-year-old.
Right on the edge for this one.
He still really likes animation, so, and live action, like kids movies. So
he's
I'm
a little
thinking,
younger, but yeah.
I think he would still dig it.
I don't think the 14-year-old's going to be there, but.
She's very cynical now. Because
probably
she's a 14-year-old girl. Yes.
She knows more than all of us now.
Yes. So
that's the way this goes.
But I still like kids' movies because it's great watching them to with your kids because you kind of get to re-experiencing those feelings of watching them as a kid. So I'm going to be watching it with my son next
good.
Year for sure.
Well, I'll expect your review.
Yeah, all right.
And I do all my own stunts.
Yeah.
And I do stunts on this.
Oh, cool. So, all right, that's their show.
That's it, ladies and gentlemen. September 20th, I'm doing a stand-up club number one in Moscow.
What?
That ticket link
I can't wait to see the report on that.
That's going to be awesome. That ticket link is at grandmo.com. I will be doing the 28th.
For expats, we probably have some up there.
I'll be doing the 28th in St. Petersburg. That ticket link will be up soon.
Man.
And then Ron Placone and I are doing the Progressive Comedy Tour Down Under in November. The 14th, we're doing Melbourne. The 15th, Adelaide. The 17th, Sydney. And the 22nd, we are in Perth. All those tickets are at grahamelwood.com. And then, of course, you know, like and subscribe to my political vigilante, my left-leaning socialist ramblings over there at the Political Vigilante. Check that out.
I very much recommend you do.
So, and Long Ago and Far Away is still available in digital on Comixology, or if you want a signed hard copy, you have that at the Comedy Film Nerd store until December 15th. So check that out. I will sign it for you. And still ramping up to do the next Kickstarter for Rise of the Kung Fu Dragon Master. And that's it. All right.
That's our show, Rick. Thank you so much.
Thanks for inviting me in, boys.
Thank you, Aaron Brungart, and everybody at the All Things Comedy World Headquarters. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember, Han shot first.